Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
Your eyes have it. And you have Dr. Robert Abel Jr., the Wizard of Oz.
Hi, and welcome back. And we have a wowzer for you because you probably suspected it, but there's an epidemic of diabetes going on. So it's really important that we were able to get Dr. Jim Lenhart, a leading endocrinologist who has managed the subject and has some insights for the future. And I really appreciate it, Jim, that you're here willing to share with us today.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
So maybe it's too big a question, but what is the incidence of diabetes in the United States? I mean, is it growing? Is the obesity problem growing? Are they parallel? What has been your experience?
I don't know if it's too big of a question, but it sure is too big of an answer. The numbers are huge and frightening. So as of a couple months ago, the reports showed that about 12% of American adults over age 20 have diabetes. That works out to about 29 million. And if you look at the number of people that are following behind them, it's astounding. The CDC estimates that by the year 2020, that 40% of American adults will have diabetes. I can't even get my hand around that number.
And if you were to look at certain states, that there are certain states in the United States that have 30% of obesity or more.
Absolutely. There's a strong connection between diabetes and obesity and lack of physical activity. And if you look at the states that have the highest obesity rates, which tend to be in the Southeast, the diabetes rates mirror them exactly, but are about 10 to 20 years behind. So having obesity is the biggest risk for getting diabetes.
Would you say that there is a parallel rise in fast food consumption?
Well, it certainly is paralleled with caloric intake. And since fast food tends to be highly processed and high calorie, the answer is most likely yes. And that would also be paralleled by the lack of physical activity, which is a little bit harder to measure, of course. You'd have to wear a step counter or something to see, but the number of hours watching television is kind of a surrogate marker. The more hours you sit in front of the boob tube, the greater your risk of obesity and diabetes.
They did a 25-year study in Denmark, and those that watched television for 3 hours or more had a 50% decline in cognitive function compared to any other group that was being followed. So that goes along with the fact that it's lack of exercise and use. How do you manage the typical type 2 diabetic that comes in not grossly out of control and willing to do something about it? So what are the steps that you take, Jim?
So diabetes is a disease that is incredibly important to focus on education. Most people don't know they have diabetes, and when they find out, they don't know the first thing about it. And learning how to manage the disease and prevent its progression as best as possible is key. So we like to say that diabetes is high touch and low tech. We have our technology, but a lot of it is hard work. It's watching your weight, increasing your activity, taking your medications as prescribed, and learning what to do to stay healthy with diabetes.
And a lot of intention to do it well, and even the possibility that some of these people can sort of reverse it if they can reverse the calories and the obesity.
Yeah, unfortunately, that dividing line is not known. So diabetes at some point becomes progressive and irreversible. And we can't define what that point is, and it's probably different for different people. But once you reach that point, even if you lose weight, you still progress to needing insulin. And once you get there, virtually everyone with diabetes will end up on shots of insulin to control it someday if they live long enough. So it'd be really nice if we could identify where that point is, because you can reverse it in the early stages.
Do you think that the use of artificial sweeteners has a negative effect both on caloric intake and on the type of bacteria that reside in the gut?
Boy, complicated question, and the short answer is I don't know. So studies have been done to show that the artificial sweeteners themselves do not increase the rate of diabetes, and in fact, some studies suggest it may lower it. But other studies suggest that it increases the rate, and it's hard to reconcile how you can get different answers like that. So some people have suggested that eating artificial sweeteners kind of gets your palate used to very sweet food, and you go out and hunt of additional sweet things other than artificial sweeteners. Unproven. So stay tuned, I would say.
Okay. People are called pre-diabetic. They'll come in and saying, my doctor says I'm pre-diabetic. How do we define that?
So pre-diabetes is not a true disease. It's a prodrome. It's a stage that you pass through on your way towards getting diabetes.
Gotcha.
And it's defined as elevated blood sugars, but not high enough to reach the definition of diabetes. So that would be a fasting glucose done in the lab between 100 and 125. And
gotcha.
if you think the diabetes numbers are frightening, the pre-diabetes numbers are even more frightening. We're talking about 82 million Americans with pre-diabetes. That's just a huge number. And we think that people with pre-diabetes will progress to diabetes at the rate of 5 to 10% per year if nothing is done about it. If you're looking worldwide, there's one report that there's 500 million Chinese with pre-diabetes. And if you don't think that will affect the American economy, you've got to rethink things.
Wow. Well, maybe the secret is that people should use chopsticks with all their meals to hopefully cut down their caloric intake.
And get back on your feet and do some walking. You're right.
Let's go. See, I always try and think that we're all type 3 diabetics, like pre-diabetics. But obviously, there's a different category being a pre-diabetic and being a normal person who could very well throughout life develop obesity, metabolic syndrome, and diabetes. So I shouldn't take that pre-diabetes very lightly. Thank you.
Sure.
I've been very interested in the colon microbiome. There's studies that even came out last week in The Economist where they changed the flora of mice and the fat mouse gets thin, the thin mouse gets fat. I've had a patient who got C. diff from a knee replacement. He was on death's door. They finally did their first fecal transplant at the University of Pennsylvania. They got him better quickly. He lost 45 pounds and was off medication. So that's why I bring up, do you think the secret in the future is going to be what's in our gut?
Well, it sure is an interesting topic. I'll agree with you there. And it does seem to have some potent effects, at least in mouse models. And as you pointed out, in humans as well. The problem is it's really complicated to figure it out. It's not just which bacteria live there, but which strain. So some bacteria will convert food into things that are not so good for your glucose. Steroids, for example. Others will make alcohol. And those people may be predisposed to cirrhosis of the liver. And figuring out which bacteria are good and which strain and what the quantity that is optimal looks to be a daunting task, but it sure is a fascinating field.
I don't know whether it was Emerson or Wordsworth wrote a poem about moderation, but obviously that seems to be the bottom line, that all of us who are interested in health and wellness need to be moderate in all our activities, our environmental appearances, our food intake, and our exercise.
Don't know about Emerson or Wordsworth, but I quote Voltaire when he said, when in doubt, try moderation.
Oh, I love it. And he was not a very optimistic person. That's terrific. Well, Jim Lenhardt, thank you for being with us. That's J. Lenhardt, L-E-N-H-A-R-D, at ChristianaCare.org. Also, www.christianacare.org. Learn more from Jim and other wizards like him who can help us develop a way to beat this and to resist it.